and welcome back to the Research VR Podcast, everyone, the podcast where we talk about the science behind virtual reality. I am your host, Oz Balabanian, and with me is Peter Lekhoff.
Hello.
So, hi, everyone. Welcome back. This time, it's going to be another Peter and Oz episode where we discuss a little bit about what's been going on in terms of the news in the industry, some of the really exciting hardware news, some research-based things that we've seen. And we just kind of want to split the news section from the company and like the interesting project, you know, discussions that we usually include. And the main reason being is that sometimes we've had problems with timing when it comes to actually releasing these episodes. And so we don't want the news to get a little stale and old if we do end up having to keep an episode back from releasing in time. So for that reason, we are here to talk a little bit about CES wrap-up, Vive Pro impressions, some research news.
Mm-hmm. And all the other exciting topics that are related to XR, VR, IR.
Oh God, please don't use all those terms. XR.
Those are audio hashtags. Like you have to say it so the algorithms of tomorrow will scrap it and, you know, make it searchable.
That's right. It's for search engine optimization.
Yes.
So the first bit of news today actually is January 30th. And so just yesterday, Oculus announced, or at least Road to VR reported on Oculus having a huge hiring spree where they're basically bumping up the numbers of open positions up to like over 450 positions. And the reason why we want to talk about it is because the main thing that they're concentrating on seems to be research.
Yes.
Whether it's internships or postdocs or just collaborative research with universities, their website has so many research positions open. And we want to name a few of them and point to you guys so that, you know, that there are dear listeners that are really interested in the science behind VR for you to be pushing the state of the industry. And if you would fit into one of these roles, you should definitely apply. So to name a few, I mean, there's a ton of computer vision researchers, engineers, applied research scientists, a bunch of mat sci, like material science positions. Most notably, optical scientists and optomechanical engineers, and basically the intersection between eyes and the movement of electronic displays. But my favorite one, I have to say, is, let's see, engineer, brain-computer interface.
They want to get inside your brain.
That's right. Wouldn't you want to be that guy, or that woman, I should say?
I would be qualified for that, and I wouldn't have such a skeptical approach regards brain-computer interfaces in general. I would totally jump for it, because if it's going to work out, we'll be definitely revolutionizing the way we interact, and I would most certainly would like to have it, or would like someone to, you know, apply for the job and do the project and finish the technology.
Right. Well, we know already that Facebook at their last F8 conference showed off a rudimentary brain-computer interface for basically typing.
Yes.
So, you know, this goes beyond virtual reality, I think, into all forms of interactions with software.
Yes, particularly for handicapped people. So for handicapped people, it's definitely a bliss, and it's helping them. I want to see an application for a healthy person where you're faster with a brain-computer interface and, you know, really typing your own fingers, but I hope it is doable. And I'm pretty sure that Facebook is definitely not behind most of the other institutions and have some kind of, you know, decent resources available.
Yeah, in fact, I'm sure they're probably up ahead in front of people in terms of applying it to an actual product.
Yes, that's for sure.
A few more positions that I just want to throw out there. Postdoc research scientist for haptic perception, postdoc research scientist for perceptual human factors, research scientist for photonic devices, soft robotics, time of flight sensors, and virtual humans. So, dude, this is freaking fascinating. Like, especially if I was back in university, I would want to, you know, at least work and learn towards fulfilling one of these positions. So anyway, we don't want to concentrate on these for too long. You should check out these career openings at oculus.com/careers/openpositions. Anyway, I mean, this is not a paid ad or anything. We just think this is cool as hell.
Yes.
All right, moving on. So we have a bunch of news that we want to kind of get through, and we also want to talk about the main topic, which is Vive Pro. I have actually recently, as of last week, got to try it out, and I have some impressions that we can talk about here.
And I also don't know your impressions, and I'm also very excited to hear them.
Oh, you didn't read what I wrote on Discord?
No. I was on a dream hack on this esports event trying to survive. So I will read it afterwards, but now I want to hear your true impression.
Well, for people that actually wanted to see some of the pictures and videos that I also posted, I wrote them in our Discord channel, which you can find in probably the description of this episode. This podcast.
Yeah.
And we've put it up on, you know, all our channels as well. So you guys should join it there, because then you also get to have like a day-to-day communication on some of the stuff that we'll be discussing here. And also, I know a lot of our audience is like pretty well informed on a lot of these topics. That's where we get to learn from you guys.
Yeah.
In terms of sometimes, you know, things that we miss, that's where you should go to tell us. So anyway, the Vive Pro, this was HTC's big announcement for CES. And I think CES ends up being their main event that they always announce their big stuff at. So for the past like 3 years, starting in 2016, they announced the Vive Pre, and with a camera in the front, you know, that was like, oh, it's revolutionary. Like, we had to hold back from releasing the Vive in December. At least that was the narrative at the time. In 2017, they announced the deluxe audio headphones as well as the Vive trackers. And now in 2018, we have the kind of like Vive 1.5, the Vive Pro with a 2880 by like 1660 display. I want to say it's they up-res it to like 3K.
Those numbers are easy to, you know, mix up.
It comes with it comes with Lighthouse 2.0 lighthouses. Yay. As well as backwards compatibility for Lighthouse 1.0. And also comes in this kind of not so great looking navy blue color.
Yeah, the color is debatable, but apart from that, the fact that they actually included the new lighthouses is very, very interesting, because now you can have up to 10 by 10 meters or something like that. It's huge.
Yeah, it's quite large. And you can also have four, you can, you know, put four lighthouses together.
Yes, however, I think also only after some update or whatever. So it's not out of the box. They still need to figure it out. I mean, one reason that those things perform better is that they don't have two rotation units anymore, but just one, and they perform actually a cross pattern instead of horizontal and vertical. And that way they also consume less power, have less, you know, rotating parts. That means you can power them up longer with an external battery. It's kind of cool.
That is really cool. And correct me if I'm wrong, but do they have a wider field of view as well?
They look like they do.
Yeah, they have a curved front, so which makes you think that they should see wider.
I'm pretty sure they are wider.
In terms of the headset, actually, I should speak a little bit about what I felt. So the version I tried is pretty much going to be what they'll be shipping, except for probably a few things they might be able to change, like the foam pad, that, you know, the facial interface, hopefully. So I'll start from the back. The back of the headset is like a whole new design. It's basically huge foam, like two foam pads that are like built around each other, and it's supposed to cup the back of your head while still providing support around. And then moving forward towards your ears, you have integrated headphones that are actually over the ear headphones, not like the deluxe audio strap that are on ear headphones. And the over-ear headphones obviously provide a little bit of more sound insulation and immersion on top of that. And I believe they did say that they have new audio drivers, or like a new DAC that's drive, or right? DAC?
DAC, yeah. Digital audio.
DAC and an amp. That's right. They have a new DAC and an amp that's driving these headphones.
Interesting.
You know, expect to hear better sound that's coming through it.
Is it removable?
They are removable with a screwdriver.
Okay.
I guess similar to how Oculus Rift has their headphones. Yeah.
Because some people will definitely, you know, want to stick to their solution, but...
Right, right. But the most interesting part about this headset is the front. So the display in the front. I do actually should mention that the resolution that they're driving isn't exclusive to the Vive Pro. I just recently realized that the Odyssey, the Samsung Odyssey headset, the Windows Mixed Reality headset, you know, runs at the same resolution with an AMOLED display, which makes me think, are they using the same display from Samsung? I wonder.
It would be no surprise to me, but I think we need to, you know, await for the tear down or tear up. You know?
That's right.
People need to actually look at the panels. And by the way, the Odyssey headset from Samsung, still not available in Europe, is apparently one of the best mixed reality headsets out there.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, there was also a huge sale on Amazon for Windows mixed reality headsets about a week or two ago. They slashed down the prices down to $200.
Yeah, right? It was really ridiculous, like super cheap.
I almost bought one, but I honestly didn't want to. I was just holding out for the Samsung Odyssey. Like, that's not the one I want.
Yeah. Everyone wants a good one.
And I also want a VR laptop so that I can work remote.
I have finally a VR laptop and I can tell you they're heavy but useful.
It's nice to have a company that can give you things, unlike me.
But it's also nice to be free and, you know, do awesome stuff and not be forced to do bureaucracy. However, coming to the front of the Vive, you have two wonderful cameras in front, and I think Engage wrote a few days ago an article that they want to do certain feature with those cameras. They want to do obstacle detection, so they kind of want, so the two cameras obviously do in a similar way what the other mixed reality headsets are doing. They, you know, see inside the depths because they are two and they have focal length between them. And with the help of those two cameras, the headset can kind of pick up like a desk in front of you or a chair, and it seems like to render it inside your chaperone system. So it's more like an advanced chaperone system.
Right.
Now, to be honest, if the Microsoft mixed reality headsets can track their own position in space with two cameras, why couldn't this headset potentially long-term, you know, work without the lighthouses? Because I really enjoy the lighthouses. I don't want them to disappear. But when you want to have tracking stability, you could at least interlapse and use as well the two cameras for, you know, detecting your position as the lighthouses. Who knows?
So a couple of things on that. I do want to mention that not only are they going to be improving the chaperone system with, you know, better edge detection and object detection and whatnot that'll come into your VR world, but they also said that you can do some basic hand gesture tracking, and not finger tracking like a Leap Motion, but I think they want to open it up for developers to be able to use things like your hands. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there. I don't think that'll be a major component of this headset, because guess what? You know, most headsets will not have that be a thing that to have access to. So I wouldn't imagine developers wanting to build entire games around a rudimentary hand tracking system that doesn't work as well as Leap Motion. But in terms of inside out tracking, I mean, yes, you know, the Windows MR headsets can do that with two cameras. We don't know the specs of these cameras, and from what I can tell, they're probably not ideally placed on the headset itself to do any kind of inside out tracking, right? Like the cameras that are on the Windows MR headsets are out to the edges and actually not completely facing forward. They're facing at an angle, you know, a little obtuse angle, so that you can have the most coverage of the room. So anyway, I'd be very skeptical if they would even be able to do inside out tracking. Plus, I'd say they have too much invested into lighthouse tech that they'd even want to that direction.
I agree with you. However, if you would, you know, just have those few moments where you suddenly cover the headset with both of your hands or whatever, or you're under a desk and the lighthouse just disappears for half a second, you could improve maybe stability with it. That's what I mean. I don't want them to get rid of the lighthouse system. I actually enjoy the lighthouse system over everything else. So it's more like stability-wise. Yeah. Like they could maybe reuse it, but who knows if they will.
Who knows? I mean, that would be interesting if they could have like a switch off system. I should mention they have now two microphones on the headset for improved audio quality. Thank the Lord. And I should also say that they have there's a bunch of just ergonomics and UX improvements on the headset, including this feature that most people didn't even know existed on the first Vive. But on the sides where the strap meets your headset, you could actually pull out that ring and then move it. So, and it actually moved the distance between the screen to your lenses. And it actually, that if you bring the screen as close as possible, that actually improves the field of view of your headset by like 5 to 10 degrees. Most people don't know that. So they made that whole mechanism way easier with basically one switch underneath the bottom of the headset, and you grab it and you move the headset back and forth, kind of like a PSVR, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yes. It's kind of, I mean, to be honest, it's very interesting. So we have been ordering the HTC Vive system since 1.5 years here at the company I'm sitting at. And it's very fascinating to see how the box has changed and the headset has slightly changed, but only incrementally. Like the box kind of shrunk a little bit.
Right, by 20%.
The layout changed, yes. And then suddenly the part looked kind of different. The cable was kind of different. They had like a lot of small changes in the middle of production, which is kind of very unusual. I mean, Oculus sticks to its design.
But they're smart in approaching it from this angle, yeah. Because think about it. The people that are actually buying these headsets are PC people.
Yes.
And as we all know, people that would have PCs don't buy entire new rigs. They just buy parts and they upgrade parts. And so, you know, approaching it from a modular design for a PC-based audience is perfect. Exactly what you should be doing.
I mean, that's actually, so before you speak about the resolution of this new headset and how you perceived it, I kind of really excited about that. One thing to mention is that they don't want to sell it right now, and they will sell it first to people who already bought a Vive. So they want to first sell just the headset, not the controllers, not the lighthouses, because the lighthouses will come also later. Yes. They announced that the first people who can buy it will be people who are already customers. So you can upgrade your Vive.
So just an HMD upgrade will be
kinda
the
first round. Yeah. Okay. So it fits perfectly in your description. They kind of want you to upgrade the system incrementally, later get the lighthouses and the knuckle controllers or whatever they're called. So
in terms of price, let's put our predictions out there.
I was have a tough discussion with Chris, by the way. I think that because they will ship it without the controllers and without the lighthouses, they can, you know, have a lower price than if they would need to if they would ship the whole system. So I'm pretty sure they want to have the price below $1,000 or 1,000 euros.
For the full system?
Well, at least for the headset. And I think that the headset would be...
Oh my God. What's the prediction you're making for just a HMD only?
I think it will be 600.
Oh, wow. I was going to say 400 to 500. And I thought that was like on the high end for just a headset.
I mean, they want to earn money. They will try to make the price super high and see how well it sells. I mean, if people are willing to spend 500 bucks on the PMax, you know, they will maybe spend 600 on a, you know, well-estimated system that's just an upgrade for them. They would definitely make the price lower than the whole set right now. So maybe, I don't know, how much does a Vive as a whole set cost right now?
I want to say 600. Let's check on Amazon.
Okay, then, I mean, I have the German Amazon, so it's, anyway, broken.
It's, $599 for the full Vive.
Okay, then the headset would be 500, maybe.
You know, this $599 doesn't even include the deluxe audio strap.
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
Or even the I don't even know if it includes the 3-in-1 cable, although
I don't think neither. And also, one thing that maybe a lot of people listening don't realize, there is a business version of the Vive that has actually different setup of the box. So what you get when you get a business Vive, I mean, you have to pay, I think, $1,200 or $300. You get the audio strap included, and you also get, for example, an extension box, so you can have a longer cable. So you can two. Yes, you can use technically two link boxes. I'm not sure if everyone who's listening is aware of it. You can chain them, but the Vive Business Edition comes with an extra box that is just an extension that doesn't work any other purpose.
So it comes. The Vive Business Edition has two link boxes and two cables.
Yes, but one is not a link box, but it's an extension box. Actually, written on it, and if you mix them up, it doesn't work. So
that's a cool fact. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, I didn't know neither, because they were hiding the boxes from us at my company, so we don't use them accidentally.
That's really funny. Yeah.
Now, how was the resolution?
Okay, so yeah, we put our predictions out there. You're saying, you know, at least $500 or $600. I'm saying 400 for an HMD. I mean, even that is still somewhat expensive.
I agree, but they never, you know, they were never cheap. I mean, they never tried to be cheap.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Vive is positioning itself as the most premium VR product for enterprise and for high-end gamers, which it's not a bad place to be, because they honestly don't have any competition in that space yet. Anyway. So my experience with the Vive, I know people are like, stop talking about the specs. Tell us how it felt. Is it worth the $400 to $600 that you're predicting? I'd say, okay, I'm not going to talk about it from a price point perspective just yet. I'm just going to talk about it in terms of an experience, in terms of like my face when I put it on and like what I saw. So I actually have the my first time putting on the Vive Pro recorded. I had my phone in my hand recording, you know, with a front facing camera. Just so if I had a crazy reaction, I would have it. Put it on, and immediately the first thing I like looked at the Steam VR Home that I was looking at. I was like, wow, this is pretty freaking crisp. Like it has a, I'd say a good wow moment that you will feel the first time you put it on, and probably then for the next, you know, 5 to 10 to 20 times that you put on, you'll be like, oh, nice. This is a good place to be in. It's definitely noticeable improvement. Way more noticeable than any kind of like super sampling you can push on your current Vive. I'd say it's even slightly better. You know, even the Windows MR headsets are like slightly higher resolution than the Vive. It's like way better than that. You know, someone asked me, did I see the screen door effect at all? It's like, I was like looking at it, but like, I mean, no, like you can't, you know, same as a laptop, right? Like if you look into a laptop, you can kind of pull out certain bits and pixels if you want, but like that's not really that, your eyes aren't really looking at that. The field of view obviously hasn't changed, but like just everything that you're looking at is way more crisp, way more sharp. And the first thing I actually wanted to try and see, you know, if it made a significant improvement was photogrammetry. So I downloaded an app that's this unreleased app that I had contributed in. And I started taking a look at some of the scans that I had done from this summer. And yes, like I think actually photogrammetry is probably the one application in VR that's going to have a noticeable improvement. And actually for the next, you know, 5 years, 5 to 10 years or so, because there's so much detail that you have with within the meshes and the textures of photogrammetry that are still completely downsampled with the current headsets, that for the, you know, next 5 years that we have higher and higher resolution headsets, they will be able to better take advantage of those smaller details that are in the distance with photogrammetry scans. So yeah, I looked at my scan and I was like, whoa, like the sense of immersion comes to you at a way faster pace than you would with Vive or Rift right now, where you kind of still have to convince yourself that you're in somewhere. You know, there's a certain amount of like self-deception you kind of have to do. You know, like, oh, I'm not noticing the pixels. I'm not noticing the computer-ness of the experience. I'd say this, I mean, it doesn't blow that away completely, but it takes less effort for sure. Nice. Let's see what else there. The tested guys actually were talking about that because there are now more pixels, you now have more God rays, which I didn't notice because I wasn't really? In a black environment with white text. I didn't see that, but that's what they reported on. Yeah. That actually the lenses are still Fresnel lenses. And you still have the God rays, and you know, that's, so, I mean, I don't know how we're going to get around that without getting rid of Fresnel lenses. But I'll just say that at least in the VR experiences that I was in, I didn't really think of it or notice it at all. And I'd say that's pretty true for most apps in VR currently, because you're kind of just, you're usually not in a black space with white text. And if you are, then that's no. That's the designer's fault for not designing around it.
Well, I mean, if you look at ToadBrush, you would kind of usually prefer some kind of dark background behind you, right? But
that's true.
Not necessarily dark and white. So this combination is kind of very unusual, or at least not typical, right. Let's say.
What else? I was able to download advanced OpenVR settings on the PC that I was using. Yeah. Oh. And actually push the super sampling up to like 2, 2.5 on that PC. And like then the photogrammetry scan became even clearer and just like even crisper and like... Yeah.
And the poor salesperson was wondering why the, you know, fans are spinning so loud and the PC starts to throw fire.
I did notice a little bit of performance issues, especially since like the scan that I had in there was not exactly the most optimized thing. And yeah, we were really pushing it on this PC. But you know, it's doable, it's possible, and it's actually even a greater improvement on the headset itself.
So actually, in terms of the GPU, I think they said in the statement that they had all the PCs that were demoing it running with a one, so single 1080.
I think that's what this PC had as well. They're a 1080 or a 1080 Ti.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a great GPU, kind of costly. I'm also looking forward to the new generation of GPUs coming at some point.
I should mention that what I'm predicting is that the Vive Pro will have a minimum spec of a 1060 to run it rather than the 970.
Really?
Yeah, I think it'll have to be a 10 series for sure.
No, but I mean, I would say it's 1070.
I mean, yeah, you might be right about that, but from what I've been hearing from people is that they've confirmed that it's going to need a beefier GPU to run the headset.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have more pixels. It's kind of exponential growth. The problem is that VR already is kind of very heavy on the GPU, and now you kind of add even more pixels and you want even crisper pictures. Right. Well, good luck.
So actually, don't think about investing in a GPU anytime soon, because prices have freaking skyrocketed. Nope. Thank you, crypto miners, for making this world into a worse place.
In fact, Azad has actually shared a screen with me during the podcast for some time where we discussed news, and I was looking at the Bitcoin.
Oh yeah, my ticker
jumping up and down. I was like wondering what is it.
I have in my status bar of my MacBook, I actually have the Bitcoin price, the Ethereum price, and the Litecoin price just up there. I'm not a crypto miner, and I honestly think a lot of crypto is really just, it's kind of what VR was shady like 2.5 years ago, filled with a lot of charlatans and scammy type of things. But anyway, before we diverge, I should say, actually buying a PC, an actually built PC with a 1070 or 1080 will be cheaper than buying a individual GPU these days. So if you need an upgrade in terms of your computers and your spec, think about buying a bundled PC. They're actually better priced.
Yeah, it's very strange, but it's true.
So,
or you can wait for the new generation.
Actually, going back to the Vive Pro, just the final thoughts on it. The headset with the display, definitely huge improvement. Very happy that we're at that point now where we actually have higher resolution headsets. The audio definitely also was an improvement as well. The comfort of the headset is, even though it looks bigger and bulkier and somewhat more ugly, it's actually lighter. So there's more, it looks like it has more plastic and more stuff on it, but it's actually all the parts themselves are lighter, noticeably so. And it sits on your head a little bit more balanced. And so the ergonomics are nice. It just doesn't look good. That's the part that I just can't get over. It just looks worse.
I had actually a thought recently. You remember those ThinkPad laptops?
Right.
The old ones? They didn't really look good, but they looked like they were robust, right? So they had this appeal on me that this is a working device. And I have a feeling that the Vive is, I'm looking at the Oculus and I'm looking at the Vive, and yes, the Oculus is super wonderfully slick, all those curved lines.
Yeah.
But you look at the Vive and you don't expect it to be, beautiful, because it's like power horse, it's like, it's ruggedized, right? It kind of looks tough.
It's definitely a working person's headset, it gets the job done. That's what it says. And on top of that, when you slap on those antler antennas Vive wireless system on top of the headset, then you'll really look like you're from the freaking 80s future.
Have you tried it?
I haven't tried the HTC Vive wireless system, no. But Road to VR said that it works pretty well, but apparently there's some latency that it introduces, which is odd considering the fact that, TP-Cast's, I felt no difference with the TP-Cast system.
What do you think about the fact that TP-Cast was actually from the incubator of
ViveX?
Vive, and ViveX, and now they also kind of have a competitor to themselves or to the companies they have.
I've asked them about that before. I guess I don't know if it was like an official statement, which I don't think it was, but they were just saying that obviously, TP-Cast is a ViveX company, and they I'm guessing that's why that was if it was a exclusive technology to the Vive first before. TP-Cast decided to make it available for Rift.
And then they decided.
At the same time, I don't think it happened afterwards. At the same time, Vive was also working with some partners on a number of different wireless systems. And one of them was this partnership with Intel with their Y-Gig technology, which is what ended up being the Vive wireless system. So, I mean, I think HTC just wasn't particularly excited about the TP-Cast as a product. And I mean, I say, you know, rightfully so. I said the same thing where, I mean, it's a great technology, works well, but as a product, it's like very beta, very alpha. Like you don't even have a battery indicator inside of the headset to know if your headset, you know, if you're going to run out of battery and everything's going to turn off. Like, you know, simple things like that. The fact that you needed like 17 cords and like another router and something in the middle to connect it all. Like I actually drew a diagram for the Upload VR review that I was writing. It was like all.
Yeah. I actually set up my first time the TP-Cast a week ago. Nice. And I mean, I checked their tutorial, so I watched their video, and after you watch the video, you do it. It's not that hard, but it took me 10 to 15 minutes.
Yeah.
It's obviously not plug and play.
Anyway, yeah, it seems like Vive was working on its own way of doing things, and that includes antlers that you will attach to your headset. So that's where we are with the state of the headsets and the hardware. I mean, it's not a terrible thing. I'm just I'm groaning and moaning, but we're definitely in the early days. Definitely the early ThinkPad, thick laptops, and thick modular phones type of days of VR hardware.
I mean, I don't mind thick modular phones and thick laptops as long as they perform well.
Totally.
If, you know, the new Vive Pro will satisfy my need for more pixels, I'll be super happy. But I have first to try it.
All right, enough about the Vive Pro. If you have more questions that you want me to answer in terms of impressions and specs and whatnot, let us know either on Twitter or Twist Discord, actually, is when you'll probably have a more direct response. Cool. Oh, and I think we did mention the lighthouses. The Vive Pro does come with new controllers that apparently have slight improvements or no improvements, but they're blue as well. And they're 2.0 compatible.
Great news. Yeah, there is a great news, or actually a news somewhere that I saw that was about this 3D printed gimbal thingy that you put on the Vive controller.
Not a gimbal, but like the thumb pad.
Yeah, thumb pad, yeah. It kind of looked like I really want to 3D print it. We should maybe include it in the show notes because the touchpad of the Vive is very imprecise. And yes, I also played Fallout VR. To be honest, Fallout VR is one of the worst games, really? And also the best games ever, because, I mean, their VR implementation is awful, but it's like a full blown-up game, so it's cool.
Right.
I don't know who was in charge there to port it, but, I mean, they made so many UX errors, it's incredible. But yeah, it's a full blown-up game, and you can spend potentially hours there. If you would have this 3D printed thing, it would even be more fun.
We should have another discussion about thumb pads versus thumbsticks. Because I've had...
Oh, damn. I have no opinion on it.
I'm in a similar boat. I have a very harsh or strong opinion of either one. But I know people that are like diehard fans of the trackpad. They're like, you know, get rid of the stupid thumb pad, the thumbsticks that Oculus had, especially with the Oculus Santa Cruz controllers. You know, they're getting rid of the thumbsticks to the thumb pad. I should mention that the one thing that would really excite me about a thumb pad is that if they include, you know, small, very precise haptic or taptic engine. Mm-hmm. So think of like the iPhone, you know, the button down below, or like the little, you know, the precise haptics that they have in there. If you can include that in a thumb pad where the you can feel different things on your thumb, that is seriously such a game changer.
I fully agree, to be honest. The iPhone and the Apple, you know, haptic engine with the linear accelerometers. I mean, it really blew my mind. I was never, you know, believing after I read it that the technology is awesome, but when you use it, it feels really incredible. And something like that would totally fit inside the VR world.
The one experience that actually really gave me that, like, inspiration that this should be something that's pursued more is the Realities IO app, you know, that I've talked about them before. Their Death Valley photogrammetry experience includes basically, you know, you're in the desert, it's rocky floor. They have a collider on the floor that, like, when you're going to teleport, the teleport is a sense of extended reach that on the thumbpad of the Vive, you can actually, when you click and hold the teleport and you move the controller left and right, you can feel the rocky floor that you're about to teleport into. So it's literally like an extended thumb that you're, you know, scraping across the floor and you're feeling like the,
That's really so cool.
I wish more people did things like that. But I thought that was really neat and it really inspires you to think about like, wow, if they actually made a haptic system underneath these trackpads that, or these thumb pads that would actually, precise, like what kind of wizardry you could actually accomplish with that. Yes. Vive and Oculus, if you're listening, yeah, you guys should get on that. Okay.
Yeah, you guys should just stop trying to earn money and spend all your money on awesome hardware research for free and make awesome haptics and yeah, just research. Just
Be all right, enough about Vive. Moving on to Lytro. Lytro announced that they have acquired the Limitless team to build tools to work with light fields in game engines. So Limitless, the company behind popular VR experiences like Gary the Gull, and I believe they worked on a few other things as well, like Reaping Rewards. So Limitless was founded like from an ex-Bungie person, Tom. I should probably do my research before I talk about it, but they're actually a company that was all about creating interactivity in VR. That's, you know, way more from just touching. It's more of a talking interactive engine where, you know, you have multiple paths that the characters and the NPCs that you're interacting with can go down. And that's all based on your movement, your reaction and what you're saying to them. It sounds great and all, except when you try, you know, Gary the Gull, you're just like, what the hell? This is not that good. But I don't mean that as a knock towards them. I just, you know, at least the first demo that they put out there wasn't as good as you'd hope it to be. But, you know, at least this is an interesting direction for Lytro to be going in, because they realize that, you know, even though you're in a 6DOF video environment, there's still the sense of being a ghost there. And how do you add interactivity into a place like that? So hopefully Limitless will be the way that they do that. I should mention that I asked one of the employees at Lytro to like provide an example of interactivity. And so they linked me to a YouTube video that Road to VR had posted. And it kind of just shows the person in VR standing in the Hallelujah experience that Lytro put out, throwing beach balls, which...
Mm-hmm. So there is a particular problem with light fields and interactivity. So let's say you are in a scene that is completely a light field. You can look around. So I send you light field and you can look around. You can be in any place and you have all the information. Now, the moment you start to interact with, the light fields change. And you can't just, you know, change one part of the light field because it resembles a reflection from every perspective, right? So technically, if you would, you know, stream some kind of light field to your headset, you would need to all the time, you know, calculate all the possibilities, what you could do with the environment, and kind of stream them and have a certain way, decision tree, and chop it away. And to be honest, I mean, interactable light field environments, I don't think are yet possible. I think what they will do is a mixture of static scenes and some kind of rendered scenes that kind of appear to be inside the scene, but are not light field
technically. Yeah, I mean, even the demo that they sent me, you know, the beach balls in Hallelujah. Yeah, I mean, so
looks that awesome.
The church that you're standing in is, I'm pretty sure, a photogrammetry environment that they scanned, which then they overlaid, you know, a chroma keyed light field volumetric person, you know, the singers and the choir in the back. So, you know, like, adding a collider to a photogrammetry scan so that you can throw beach balls, like that's what it seemed like to me. It didn't seem anything too revolutionary in a sense, but you know, that's just from me watching a YouTube video and not, I don't know if I'm fully understanding it, but
yeah. So maybe someone from Lytro wants to come to our podcast and explain their technology in depth. Feel free to reach out to us.
We have the technology to talk to them. Next up, this is the most shocking news of the week. The one that we didn't see coming and you could not have predicted. Pimax 8K headset Kickstarter deliveries are delayed to Q2.
Oh my gosh. It's like the first time a Kickstarter project got delayed. It's like, what will people now, you know, think with this Bitmarian Kickstarter? Is it the face just destroyed?
Not just a Kickstarter, but like the most ambitious VR headset that has to deliver to like, what is it, thousands, hundreds of thousands of people now? Yeah, with like one of the biggest, you know, chunks of money that they've raised on Kickstarter. So yeah, they're still working on it. they showed off a version at CES that apparently was an improvement in some senses, but they still need to work on specific smaller problems, including the refresh rate, which keeps moving between prototypes. Like one was 60, one was 80, one was 72 hertz. Like, so interesting things there.
I mean, I'm pretty sure they would deliver something, and I'm pretty sure this something will be to a certain degree more useful than a cardboard VR experience. The question is, you know, whether they will be, you know, from the perceived user experience as a whole, better as a Vive Pro or something else. I mean, I can imagine it will be kind of nicer than the Oculus, but can they be, you know, better than the mixed reality headset or the Vive?
Yeah, Pro? I mean, I'm not too skeptical actually in terms of the experience. I think even the widened field of view, you know, the fact that it's like up to almost 200. I think that's like a huge improvement that we still haven't seen any of the major headset manufacturers implement. I'm curious as to why. I think we've talked about some of the problems with the peripheral stretching that they're doing in Pimax. Maybe, you know, maybe there's some trickery involved there, but
I mean, look, the first Oculus was also kind of, you know, having certain effects that were not desirable. And I mean, you know, if you push too much in one direction without solving certain issues, you would have some downsides. It's okay. And I hope the device will sell well and people will be happy with it, or, you know, when people are not happy with it, won't sell well. I mean, I just got the Meta 2 and I packed it, and I'm pretty sure that at least from, you know, what people will get with the Pimax, it will be a better experience than after I unpack the Meta, for example, because it still feels like very much a developing unit, whether the Pimax, from what I read and what I saw, kind of looks already more consumer-like.
Actually, let's talk a little bit about the Meta. So you just received your headset?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I have very mixed feelings. So, feelings. On the one hand, I really enjoy what the company is doing, and I truly believe that they have the potential to change a certain you know, approach how other companies do it. And if they succeed, I would be very happy. And I'm really, you know, I really like their scientists who I meet at conference, and their device 1 year ago when I first, you know, tried it in their office was really impressive. Now what I got, you know, in the mailbox is basically the same device I tried 1 year ago.
Oh, really?
It has certain, I mean, I don't care about the form factor. The form factor looks really good. The problem is that the tracking is still it jumps a little bit, and it's not very stable. And
it has a certain amount
of screen
drift.
Itself looks, yeah, there's a jittery drift. I don't know what it is. It's just not perfect. Now, the screen itself is good. I mean, it has certain small disadvantages compared to the HoloLens one. Kind of looks maybe not so, I don't know, I can't describe it. It has maybe slightly less quality perceived, but it's way wider. So I really enjoy it and it looks awesome. And yes, I could have started the demos that they ship with it, and it's kind of awesome. I can grab a ball and I can, you know, the earth basically, and I can move it around. It's cool. But I have to tell you, the developers I'm working with were kind of not very enthusiastic. Mm-hmm. I had to, you know, give them, you know, a nice pitch. You know, this is the future. You need to develop with it.
So even internally, you have to do the marketing for them, even internally in your company.
And that sucks.
That's not a great position to be in as a consumer.
I mean, it's still a developer kit, and I really wish them, you know, well, and I really, you know, hope that they will improve the factors, because the people I met are really impressive, really good scientists, really good engineers, and most likely there will be an update like with the Leap Motion that suddenly the device will be like 10 times better. But I want to have it before I, you know, continue putting way more faces.
So a couple of questions. You mentioned the visual quality in reference to the HoloLens. How, in what way do you, are you saying it's slightly worse? despite the fact that it's like a way wider field of view. Because I agree that the field of view is totally impressive.
The field of view feels really impressive. I don't know. It felt maybe...
Is it the colors or...
Missing the right word. Yeah, the colors. Maybe it's just the gamma or the contrast. Something is just not fully right. But I wouldn't care if the device would be working great. I would just put it on my head and don't give it to anyone else. I would just take it away from the developers. Right now, I don't have any applications for it. And I don't have the time to develop them myself. So I need, to see what we can do with the device. But yeah.
So, yeah, I guess the color accuracy, kind of cool. I think, is that what comes to mind when you're thinking in terms of like the difference of color?
Kind of, yes. But once again, if the tracking would be good, I wouldn't even complain. Like, I don't care if the colors are 100% perfect or not. I mean, if I need to look at a perfect picture, I would take a screen or I would print it out. Here, I want to have some nice, augmented reality experience. Right. And the whole experience doesn't feel, particularly baked. So there still needs to be a lot of improvement. And I hope that they will do it, because just selling the headset is not enough. You need to actually, make the developers happy.
So that's interesting. I have a couple thoughts on, I wish... With Meta obviously having the tracking problems, this is not news. We've heard about their tracking problems in a while. And every time I meet with someone from Meta, they tell me about their new amazing software that's fixing all their tracking issues, whatnot. And I'm sure they've made big, significant improvements since the last time they've shown it. But I just really wish that they push it more as a display rather than a interaction. You still have to use the Meta with your PC, which means you still have access to your mouse and keyboard, which, unlike in VR where you can't see your hands or your keyboard, you can with an AR headset. I wish they actually pushed that as a bigger use case rather than the whole revolutionary, you're going to touch your windows, grab the windows, move it around your room and all that shit. Like, I agree. Exactly.
Honestly, just imagine, you would take like a white or a black or whatever color is great, plain. You would put it there where your screen is, but not just where one of your screens, but you would just, put a half spherical thing in front of you on the desk. Then you have your keyboard and your mouse. And when you look at the sphere, it gets tracked nicely. And then you have all your windows and whatever. It's fine. I don't need to grab objects all the time. I'm totally fine using my mouse and keyboard, just having a more like big screen experience.
And from what I've heard internally is that most of the Meta engineers do that. They use their mouse and keyboard with their headset, and maybe once in a while you pick up you grab the window with your hand and move it because it's easier than finding the mouse and putting it over the window. I think that shouldn't be abandoned as something that's interesting to people, because it's actually an incremental step. But if you can prove that it's a significant improved incremental step than the current experience that you have with PCs. The current experience that you have with monitors, then honestly, I don't know, at least maybe I'm not working on their marketing team for that reason, is that I think that's a better use case than what they're trying to push. But I just think it's something that should be considered more. And I'm interested in terms of monitor replacements and the color accuracy, because I do a ton of visual work. And to be honest, I have a pretty nice PC, but a really terrible monitor. I have like a $50 monitor that I bought in college from a person that's actually like this Acer TV monitor with speaker inside. It's a really shitty 1080p monitor that I'm using. I never do any kind of video work on it because I know the colors are nowhere near as good as my MacBook Retina display.
But then again, coming close to the MacBook Retina display, you will have to spend some significant money.
But you guys, the monitor, the display quality, when you can make the argument that this display, whatever it is, it's a VR headset or an AR headset, this display will give you better looking screens, better looking videos, more accurate colors or even brighter colors than you could with any other display, then you have you've cracked such a huge market. I agree,
but even if you would just get rid of the screens and just have it around you, even if the colors are not perfect, I wouldn't care for most of those applications. But you're right. I think no one solved kind of holographic screens or whatever you call them that have really decent color quality.
Yeah, I, I'm I'd be curious as to like if the new headsets will support, you know, HDR, or like if it's AMOLED displays that the Samsung has, you know, does that mean all the blacks are true black? Do we have a P3 cool, color right? gamut, you know, that's driving the colors? Anyway, all these other things that we talk about when a new iPhone comes out, you know, how the colors in the display yes. work, the refresh rate, and even, the fact that it actually these headsets actually have to be a high refresh rate is something that isn't a common thing with monitors. And so you could, yeah. like I said, there's so much potential for disrupting just monitors. Anyway, I'm going to stop Absolutely. Ranting about it. Peter, tell us a little bit more in terms of your impressions. Like, what are there any demos or experiences that came with the Meta? Like, what can you expect when you pre-order or order now one of the developer headsets?
I really don't want to sound negative. That's the issue.
It can be truthful. It's okay.
So the demo that they ship with, so from what I understood, I haven't spent 20 hours with it, but the developers from our team have basically set it up a few times. And there's one demo where you can take objects and move them around, sort of like 3D objects, some kind of medical 3D object representation. There is obviously an SDK you can put in Unity. So when you're a developer, you should totally be good to go. When you're a consumer, you should definitely not buy it now. Like, there is absolutely nothing you can do with fair. It.
Could you, nothing. I mean, would you recommend it for someone like me that, like, I would like to have monitor, or like, I want to do just work on my PC and I would buy it as a monitor replacement, you know, even if the tracking isn't like perfect, but like,
yeah, but if the software would support it, yes, but I don't see right now.
So how it doesn't work as just like an extended monitor. Okay.
No. Or maybe it does, but not that I perceive it as useful. Maybe it does, but if I'm wrong, please correct me, but I didn't.
For our audience, if you guys have also ordered a Meta 2 and you've just received it, that, you know, let's talk, let's hear your,
share your experience.
Yeah, let's hear about it on the Discord. Cool. Well, so, I mean, hopefully we weren't too harsh on the Meta. I think there's still a huge potential.
No,
I think.
Yes, for absolutely. The company. And I wish them, you know, the most success they can get, because I really enjoy talking to their employees and I really like the design of the headset and I kind of really enjoy it. Just should be.
And it's kind of the only, it's the only device in that category that is actually available. Like, yes. that's shouldn't be understated. And it's
tough. I mean, it's a tough business to create a hardware, a platform, hand tracking plus, you know, SLAM plus display right. technology plus, you know, figuring out the manufacturing chain. I understand that it's like a lot of work, but then I don't understand why they, for example, did not include a Leap Motion sensor in it for a hand tracking. I mean, I actually talked with someone from Leap Motion. I asked them this question, you know, I mean, you're licensing your tracking technology. Why didn't you just license it to Meta? Because, I mean, this would be like one less problem these guys would have. He said, I don't know. Don't want it.
Yeah, I'm sure that's a whole other business side of business conversation that app. Speaking of Leap Motion, I do want to throw a quick shout out
yes.
to previous guests that we've had on the podcast, Martin Schubert from Leap Motion. He's been doing a lot of experimentation with using, you know, your hands as input devices. And one of the bigger things in VR that still isn't, it's still, I'd say, a problem with VR UI and UX yes. interactions is the problem of extended reach, the problem of selecting things at a distance. You know, like, how do you do it? Do you do it based on gaze? Do you do it based on actually teleporting to that distance and grabbing the object? And so Martin took a crack at it and kind of developed this, I wouldn't say white paper, but kind of a design paper as to how using Leap Motion, you know, what kind of gestures actually you could use to select things at a distance, grab them, motion them, and force pull them towards you at interacting with them. So these are major questions, major design decisions that will need to be solved in the next couple of years. And the problem of extended reach isn't anything new on this podcast. In fact, we've talked about this, you know, a year and a half ago. However, there hasn't been that much development. So props to you, Martin, for taking a crack at it. And from what it seems like, it's actually really robust system that he's built. And it's not just a white paper. You know, this is an actual interactive UI or interactive VR experience that he's built. I don't know if you can download
which
it,
is but great.
We'll basically totally link everything that he wrote, and have yes. people, you know, take a look at the GIFs at least and watch how the interactions are happening. So, oh, and if you're interested actually in the podcast that he was on, Peter, I don't know, did we actually release the audio version of the podcast, or is it only existing in video form?
We did release audio. It was Sleep Motion episode.
We have a few Sleep Motion episodes, I believe. We have one with Adam, the writer, and so
true. Yeah.
So I think this might be actually an unreleased audio episode. You can find the video. I'll try and find that on Upload VR's Facebook page, which I believe that's where we were streaming.
Yes,
streaming the podcast.
Yeah, architectural design in VR.
Yeah,
right.
That's right.
I think we only have it on YouTube. That's
yeah,
true.
We'll find the links. Also, in that podcast, we showed off a prototype Leap Motion device that I still haven't seen anywhere else. So
yeah,
it's a fun
either.
Little hidden thing on the internet that I think people should take a look at if you want to see at least what the Leap Motion, the next generation Leap Motion looks like that will be included in, you know, 6DoF headsets. A couple other things before we wrap up here. Google announced the 180-degree VR cameras at CES in partnership with Lenovo and the Chinese camera manufacturer Yi, who they've worked with for the Google Jump or Google Odyssey cameras. This is an interesting direction that they want to take this whole video VR platform into, because obviously they realize the problems with 360. They realize the inherent problems from both the filmmaker's aspect, you know, the amount of control you need to actually have and the amount of hiding you need to do from the camera, mm-hmm. with a 360 camera, and also from the experience, you know, the audience side, the problems that you have both in the amount of pixels you have to dedicate per degree to the streaming bit rate that you need to ensure is high, to the actual, you know, the chair that they're sitting on needs to be able to swivel in all directions so that you can actually see what the hell you've recorded. I mean, there's a lot of inherent problems with 360, which is why they're concentrating on 180-degree cameras, which means you actually have now, within the same video file, you know, that 16:9 video file that can run, it's an Equitangular 360 videos that now, if you stretch or shrink down to 360 degrees down to 180, you now have twice as much pixel density per degree. And on top of that, each of these VR 180 cameras are going to be stereoscopic. So you have that by default as well. So big improvements on that aspect of visual clarity plus inherent stereo video, as well as the IPD distance between the two cameras are 63 millimeters apart, which is, you know, the average IPD distance for a human eye. On top of that, on the audience side, you have now less of like, oh, am I missing the action because it's happening behind me? It's like, no, just this looks straightforward. You know, you feel somewhat immersed. You feel like you're looking at the thing that you're supposed to be looking at. And from a filmmaker's perspective, you have much more, you can frame things a lot easier. You can actually understand, you know, it's more similar to a traditional camera in terms of like you point it towards the thing that you want to shoot, and you expect that the audience is also looking at that. So that was a long one. So I'm excited. I haven't tried the cameras yet. I tried to find one on YouTube, like a video to watch on YouTube, but for some reason the 360 player wasn't working for me. But yeah, I'm excited about these. I think it's a good direction that they can be pushing this in.
Great. Do we have any news left?
Let me check. Xiaomi branded Oculus Go. Briefly say that.
Can you explain why it's so interesting?
So Oculus announced that Xiaomi, which is a Chinese phone Chinese electronics manufacturer. Like, they make everything from like refrigerators to like TVs and everything in China. Basically, this piece of news just showed off why Oculus hired Hugo Barra to replace like Brandon Uribe as head of VR at Facebook. Hugo Barra previously, I believe, was at Google, and then he was one of the execs at Xiaomi in China for the past bunch of years, and now is head of VR at Facebook. He probably was the reason why they you know, took him in so that China, now Facebook actually has a leg into China and they can produce, you know, their hardware in China. And as we know, Facebook doesn't really exist in China very much. Same as Google, because of Chinese political reasons. And, you know, they have a closed wall approach. Mm-hmm. So anyway, this is an interesting, what do you call it? A foot in the door that Facebook now has into China.
Yeah,
there isn't too much to talk about it, but it's an interesting tell of like the business decisions that are happening behind the scenes.
Absolutely.
And I'm getting tired of talking, guys.
So there is another small news before you jump to the next one that I think is kind of interesting to me. So I'm actually sometimes playing World of Tanks and World of Tanks Blitz. I'm not very good at it, but you know, sometimes they're relaxing. And Wargaming, the company behind those games, actually announced that they are developing a World of Tanks VR for VR arcades. But I hope I can actually play it.
Is World of Tanks a mobile game?
World of Tanks not, but World of Tanks Blitz is in fact mobile and also desktop compatible. So you can play it on your phone.
Cool.
And I would love to shoot tanks in VR.
That's a pretty big franchise, right?
It is. And in fact, even though it's a Russian studio, they earn shit a lot of money, to be honest. It's a very, very, very big franchise. They are at every big, you know, game exhibition and stuff. And it's kind of free-to-play game, but you can buy premium stuff, you know, to level up your tanks faster. Oh. Yeah. Yeah, I'm totally looking
That's like
forward.
The only piece of gaming news that we usually yes. don't talk much about games.
Yeah, but yeah. It's just something I like. That's fair. Franchise.
I'll give you a little bit of leeway with all right, guys. Thank you all for listening. If you haven't yet followed us on Twitter or Facebook, please do so. Find us on Discord. Look in the description of this podcast. Join our community there. We can have a fun talk. I just really enjoy connecting with our audience. Honestly, like that's why I want to push the channel so much. Because, you know, you can ask people to send you questions and emails and things, but like that, you're going to have way less interaction that way than you ever would with a Discord or Slack like channel. So I'm always excited to meet more intellectuals, more people that are interested in the science behind virtual reality and want to talk about it. So join us there. And and tomorrow will be actually, I guess we can talk a little bit about it. Here about the next episode that's coming. We're actually inviting we'll have it up. Check.
No, just record something magical and you will deliver it.
It's going to be a good episode and a lot about the social aspects of VR and you know the difference between the experiences that men have and women have in VR. So you can imagine kind of like the topic that we'll be talking about. So yeah, follow us on all of that and you know what to do. Cool.
Goodbye, everyone.